Kinder and Steinberg in the afternoon. Brought to you by Glenmore Audi. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
I know that the season ended in disappointing fashion for the Calgary Flames. You go out in five games. When you win the regular season crown in the Western Conference, that's no good. But that doesn't mean there weren't a lot of positives this year for the Flames. So we do this little fun little exercise in the offseason. I put up this article at flamesnation.ca today, and that'd be a good thing to kick around with the boys. It's Pinder, Steinberg, and Nault along with you on your drive home. So, little year-end award conversation. I came up with five different categories, thought we'd bounce these around.
Best facial hair?
Who would have the best facial hair?
Best gear style?
I feel like facial hair is a slam dunk for Bennett, no?
Yeah, yep. Actually, that's not even
not close.
That's a unanimous good point by you.
Yep.
And he did grow it back for the playoffs.
Did it help?
Yes, it helped him.
Oh, okay.
Helped him.
Should have got some more mustaches on that roster in April. He was one of the only guys that did all right. And, and Mike Smith had the beard going, too. There wasn't enough facial hair.
Yeah, and Mike Smith would be the only other candidate for best facial hair on the team. But
and the only two guys that
Sam
were
Bennett takes the cake.
Better than you would have expected in the playoffs. Everyone else was the passing or failing grade, but no one with flying colors except Bennett and Smith, really.
So, got five categories. We'll start with this one. Best newcomer, and I put this one in there just because the Flames had a lot of new faces this year. They made a huge trade. Big trade with Carolina, some free agent acquisitions, three free agent acquisitions, all of kind of varying degrees. Big one, middle of the road, and a little bit of a tweaking one with Zarnik. So a lot of new faces.
New coach as well.
New coach, also from the Carolina Hurricanes. Best newcomer. I went with Elias Lindholm, who shatters career highs in everything, shatters his career high in goals by 10, assists by 17, and points by 33. He had 78 in 81, and I know he wasn't as good down the stretch, and I know he wasn't as impactful in the postseason, but best newcomer for me. It was pretty easy. I went with Elias Lindholm.
Yeah, I'm with you right there. The emergence of Lindholm, rather than a middle six guy that maybe can play the middle, to he established himself, at least in the setup here, as a top-line winger. That's new levels from career highs of 17 goals before this year. That looked crazy when he had as many at Christmas. It was a breakout year and looks like a guy that not only has some offensive touch, but is a really good fit with those two other guys on the top line because he can go grind and he sort of complements their skill sets nicely to retrieve pucks and get it to the guys that set them up and finish them. Really like Lindholm this year.
It's really hard to not go with Lindholm, but just to bring a different one to the table so we're not all on the same page, I'd go with Derek Ryan. I mean, I feel like he's a guy who is a clear upgrade on what he replaced.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he only got better as the year went along, and for a signing that for a lot of fans was one that's like kind of a head-scratcher, one that you were very uncertain on. He had a face-off percentage near 60% this year, which is crazy impressive. He only got better in the dot, and we know how much Bill Peters prioritizes face-off wins. So I feel like Derek Ryan could definitely be in that category, yep. But there's no question the slam dunk is Elias Lindholm.
Yeah, no, Ryan had a really nice season, and I think any sort of fears, because he was a guy that played at a conference that you didn't see a bunch on a team that wasn't particularly good, at least in season standings results, and he was more of a depth piece than a core part. But he was their third best centerman. And I don't think it was close this year.
And they were looking to shore up depth,
in the second
right?
half. His line was the most consistent line they had in the second half.
Yeah. Well, and right now, that looks like one of the better free agent signings that we've seen this team decide to make over the last few years. I mean, Ryan looks like he is going to be worth every penny for the next couple of years.
Especially with salaries only continuing to climb.
Yeah, and he's smart. He's strong defensively. He can give you a little bit offensively. We know that he's a big-time part in the penalty kill. So that free agent signing looks really good. But yeah, I think Elias Lindholm would have to be the runaway winner at
yes.
that one.
Mm-hmm.
78 points in 81 games. And
shatters
for the first
every
time,
career mark he ever had.
It was crazy.
By the way,
and the best winger that Gaudreau and Monahan have ever played with.
Correct. The crazy part of this, he plays 81 of the 82 games this season. Down the stretch, he had a 4-point night against New Jersey where they went off after that mess start. I was in Florida at the time. But other than that game, he had 2 points in his last 16 games.
Yep.
Well, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he had 27 goals in the middle of January.
What did he finish with? Because I only see two goals since the...
He finished with 27
since goals. Feb
14. So then he had 24, 24 in the middle of January. 24!
Crazy.
Same with Monahan. They're right in the same category in terms of the way they kind of fell off down the stretch.
It's a troubling trend, but you still can't ignore that even with a miserable finishing 16-20 games, that's an incredible year for him.
Well, and the potential to put him at center, too, gives you... I don't think they're going to be perfectly honest with you. I'm not super confident that they're going to move Lindholm to center full-time, but it's been brought up enough even from people at the Flames to make you think that it's something they're at least considering.
Bill Peters keeps talking about it, and it's not like he's been put on the spot and grilled on it. He volunteers that regularly, which is interesting.
So in knowing that, it gives you another option too, which I think also adds to his value with the team. So, okay, this one probably not as unanimous. Biggest surprise, I went with Andrew Mangiapane because I didn't see it coming. I really didn't. Andrew Mangiapane, if you go take a look at his underlying metrics, one of the most effective forwards on the team at 5-on-5. Now, he didn't play a ton. He averaged 10.5 minutes per game, but was one of their best possession forwards, was on the ice creating high-end scoring chances, better than anybody on the team when he was on the ice, at least rate-wise. He generated shots. He generated opportunities. Andrew Mangiapane looks like he's coming into his own. And had you asked me a year ago, if you were to say, Pat, what do you think Mangiapane is going to be? I would have said, good AHLer, maybe a third or fourth line guy in the NHL. Now you ask me, you say, what's Andrew Mangiapane? I say, this guy's a bona fide NHLer, and I think this guy's got top six potential. He was, without question, the biggest surprise for me. Good on you if you saw it coming, because I didn't see it coming. That is a very, very impressive year, and the future looks really bright for him.
And again, another member of that line that was the most consistent in the second half. It was Mangiapane and Hathaway on the wings of Derek Ryan. So some shout-outs for that group based on some of the early returns. I've got Rasmus Anderson here. I always thought that this guy was better than getting sent to Stockton out of camp. Mm-hmm. And not unlike Mangiapane, who I've got winning something else, these are guys that were too good in the AHL at such a young age that statistically those guys just make it more often than the others. They're safer bets. And you can tell me whatever you want about style and size and all that, but the data is the data. Guys that do what they did at their age in the American League are very safe bets to be good NHLers. But what I didn't expect from Anderson was that he'd supplant TJ Brody as their best option on the top pair. And if he's a full-time top pairing guy next year, that's crazy to think he got sent down at the end of camp this year. It's an incredible season. We also saw progression offensively, which he's done at every level he's played at, but it happened pretty quick. After, a half year, all of a sudden we saw him chipping in offensively. And this is a guy that is going to be a huge, huge asset for the club because he's on entry level, he's cheap, and he can do the things that usually cost you $4 to $6 million bucks a year for someone to do.
Biggest surprise for me, it's a slam dunk in my opinion, it's James Neal. I did not expect for a guy who had 10 consecutive 20-goal seasons in the NHL to have not even 20 points in the regular season. That is a big stunner for me. I know that, you know, guys around the age of 30, you're going to see the production drop, but to see the way it did, he had 7 goals all year, shooting percentage was at 5. Just, he essentially, guys, went from a guy who always scored goals to being a completely ineffective NHL player, and to me, that's stunning. So I put James Neal as my biggest surprise.
Yeah, surprise in the wrong way.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I didn't see it coming. I was worried about the Neal contract
not in year one, though,
years
right?
3, 4, and 5. But yeah, I thought year one, probably year two, we're still talking about 20, 25 goals from the guy. He had 7. And
he had 19 points.
7 feels high in a way, too. I mean, he really struggled to just look impactful or swing games in any sort of favorable way for the
Flames. Well, you know why it seems high? He had 2 in the final 5 games.
That's true. Well, and you know what?
So he had 5 goals.
You know what is the scariest part about it? Is that it's not even like he was running into bad percentages. And I know you can tell me all you want, his shooting percentage was career worst, which it was. He's got he had a career shooting percentage coming into this year of 12.1%. This year it was 5%. But even if his shooting percentage is going to go back to normal and he's shooting back double digits, what type of results are we talking about? Because he generated shots, he generated events, and he generated high-end scoring chances at some of the worst rates of his career.
Yeah, they're not quality shots.
Exactly. So even if the shooting percentage goes up, what are we talking about? It's he just everywhere across the board, he was an ineffective player this year, which, yeah, I'm with you. That's
and
it.
Again, I guess the cherry on the top of the surprise is, I mean, he was a healthy scratch in the playoffs.
Biggest game of the year, healthy scratch, to save their season. He got James Neal in game five.
That's like a nice dovetail into the biggest disappointment of the season.
My biggest disappointment.
Well, yeah, that's the easy James spot. Neal. So I thought I would change it up and go with the surprise.
Yeah, and I've got him there as well. It's a really, really difficult spot for the club. It's so bad that they really don't have any option except to hope he has a stellar offseason and doesn't look like the player that was here this year. Now, he's got a longer offseason that he's had in ages, but it's not often you see a guy that looks like he can't keep up that ever gets back to keeping up.
Yeah, the way I phrased it was, the hope is Neal struggled due to a difficult adjustment to a new team and fatigue from two straight playoff runs. That's the hope. Mm. The fear is that he's hit the cliff and he's stuck Calgary with cliff. Diminishing yeah. returns for the next 4 years. That's the big time fear
so
right now.
Where'd you go with disappointment then, Will?
Mike Smith. I just felt like, I know the last half of the year he didn't play well, but you know, there was the injury in there and I just felt like he was a guy who, again, needed to be there for his team at the start of the year. He really wasn't. And I know that, you know, the playoffs ended up being pretty good.
They're great for him, yeah.
But overall, just not a very good season for Mike Smith and kind of similar to the James Neal front in terms of, okay, did I expect you to be as good as you were at times? No, but I also didn't expect you to fall off like you did. So I would say Mike Smith would be there for me. But, yeah, there's a couple other options you can go with.
Yeah, if you had told Mike Smith and his agent that they'd be running into free agency this summer with an 896,
yeah,
take that to
they'd
market.
They'd be surprised yeah. too. Yeah,
wouldn't be what they've been hoping for. Now, he did, I think, save some value with the postseason, but small samples do not rule, especially at that position. Every netminder that played in this league a substantial amount of games has had a run of five that looked good, and Smith's happened at the right time of year exposure-wise, but I still don't know who's buying that guy to be more than, what, a platoon mate backup at this point, at this level?
Yep. Okay, so based on the 2018-19 season, came up with player best position for future success. With what they did and what they accomplished during this past season, who has set themselves up for the best future career? And for me, I went with Rasmus Anderson because with what he did in the second half of the season and with him turning himself into a legitimate option as a top pairing defenseman with Mark Giordano, yeah, he definitely did get a bump from Gio. But right now, I think that Anderson on the top pairing in game one in October is probably the way it's trending. And if you were to tell me in 3 years that Anderson and Valimaki is your top pairing to start a season, I don't think you're going to be laughed out of the room either. Rasmus Anderson has set himself up to be a top-pairing NHL defenseman in this league, and for me, that's the brightest future going forward.
I've got David Rittich here. A year ago, where were we? And even, I know Wilsey brings it up all the time, there was the question after a rough training camp, would you exercise a waiver claim? Now, small samples being the key and the other being preseason doesn't matter and we can almost take nothing from it. Dylan Dubé was the best player in the preseason, if I'm correct. But he's a guy that now it wouldn't surprise you if he's a quality starter in this league. There was questions whether he could be a quality backup to start this past season. And then at the end of the year, we learn that he gets hurt December 31st, I believe, against the Sharks in a wild affair. And the numbers dip from that point on, not to the point where you're worried about him so much as, okay, he was superhuman before, but that explains even more the dip in the numbers. And if he can be anything close to that guy from October to December 31st, we're talking about an elite netminder in this league. That's a mile away from anyone's prognostications of the summer.
Yeah, I had Rittich kind of on my short list. I think he is certainly in that camp. I'm going to go with a guy that maybe won't be a top-line player in the NHL, might not be a top-pairing guy in the NHL, or a number-one goaltender, but this is a guy who's grown on me leaps and bounds. And Pinder Forever was like, hang on, he's going to come. And I know you already, you looked at his numbers earlier. You had him on your list for, I believe it was best newcomer, or no, biggest surprise. To me, setting himself up for the future is Andrew Mangiapane. The coach loves him. I thought he only got better as the season went along. I thought in the playoffs he played some of his best hockey. For his size, to be a six-round pick 4 years ago, to be where you are and play 44 games in the NHL this year and be two away from double digits in goals, I think Andrew Mangiapane set himself up to be a real nice NHL player for a long time.
I'm with you, and I've already, you know, gushed about him with the, you know, a little bit with your conversation earlier, mm-hmm. Pat, and he's coming up for another one later for me. But the thought that this guy, with all the moving parts you potentially have in the forward group, you know, where is Michael Frolik going to be? We've seen Tkachuk play the right side before. I don't think it's crazy to suggest that this guy might be best suited to be a top six
winger. I think he's a middle six guy next year.
If they don't add a top six winger, mm-hmm. because you're deleting one in Frolik. And again, as you alluded to, the numbers across the board scream this guy is kicking the butt out of his competition in the role he played this year. And all of a sudden the offense was there. And who was it in game one when they couldn't get a goal on Grubauer that scored the first playoff goal? I mean, some big spots for him.
I like it. Final one, most improved player. I went Travis Hamonic, and it wasn't close for me. Like the guy was the guy was so much better in year number two. He struggled in year one. He admittedly struggled. I think there was a big time adjustment to not just a new team, but a completely new surrounding. He goes from one part of the country to the other. I think there was some adjustment to playing with Brody. I don't think that was a very good fit, and it just seemed like the way that Bill Peters had his team playing a little bit different than the way Glenn Gullitson had his team playing. And it just seemed to fit Hamonic that much better. His pairing was that much better. Him and Hanifin were basically together every single night and every single minute of every night. Travis Hamonic's underlying numbers significantly better in year two than year number one. And you could just tell that he was more comfortable. I thought that he was the second best defenseman on this team and was a pretty easy choice. I mean, Mark Giordano was the best defenseman, probably the best player on the team this year. Next on the blue line was Hamonic. So most improved to me went to Hamonic.
I went to Mangiapane, who we've all gushed about in different columns here. But just the thought last year, could this guy play at this level? But there's certainly a lot of candidates there. I like Hamonic. That's a good one to point out. And a lot of the guys you've already mentioned, like Rasmus Anderson, even David Riddick, you could make really strong cases there. They've solidified themselves. Even Elias Lindholm, albeit a different team last year, he'd eclipsed career best by Christmas. That's nutso. Lots of candidates here.
And funny enough, you mentioned mine. Yeah, mine's Riddick. I mean, this is a guy who, let's be honest, if we're being totally honest, guys, shouldn't have made this team out of training camp. His training camp was brutal. He made the team because of his contract status, in my opinion. It was easy to send John Gillies down, and not to say that Gillies was head and shoulders above him, and nor is he now on the team's organizational depth chart. But this is a guy who came from last season when he was given the number one reins when Mike Smith went down, didn't look like he could maybe take it. Then he had a terrible training camp, not a great preseason, and look what he ended up doing this season. So for me, it's David Riddick.
Good stuff, gentlemen. That was fun. See, I told you I had a homework assignment for you yesterday.
Part about that, we didn't really have a pre-meeting about this, just a couple of texts exchanged, and nobody really crossed over a heck of a lot.
No, so. And the only nice rule that we had was we couldn't duplicate our choices, so you couldn't do one player in two categories for each individual picks. Yeah, that was good.